Thanks. I'd also like to thank the organizers and for organizing this wonderful workshop. And actually, I was here as a postdoc some years ago when this building was not built yet. So the topic for my talk today is about quasiparticles in a flowing BEC, especially in the flow of a vortex generated by vortex, and there are some interesting barophase effects, and the concept of barophase can actually help us to resolve some puzzles, and at least I encountered. And first of all, I would like to just start with the homogeneous stationary BEC, and I will work entirely with the mean field level, okay? And so in the BEC, and there's this excitation called phonons or quasiparticles, whatever you like, and the spectrum of the quasiparticles is given by the quasiparticle spectrum given by, say, omega equals square root of p squared over 2 and p squared over 2 plus 2gn, where n is the density, okay? So if you want n, the density described by the square of the condensate wave function, of course, in the actual experimental systems, we often deal with traps, right? So we never actually have such a case, uniform BEC, but a BEC in a trap. Okay, inside the trap, the density is so this is a V of R. The density looks more like the inverted parabola in the Thomas Fermi approximation, but near the edge, actually, this gets smeared. And the question is, how would we describe these excitations? Well, you can always go to the Von Lüboff equations to get your quasi-particle spectrum, right? And indeed, this has been done maybe many times. This is the trap potential, okay?
Inverted parabola.
Trap.
Yeah.
This trap potential, and this is the density inside the trap.
Density.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, but you can also get a hand, yeah?
What is the size? So, it is,
how?
Do you consider that number of particles is sufficiently big that it
So let's say that there's a approximate treatment of this problem that is using the local density approximation, right? Thank you. Actually, something I learned from Watercong. It's a very useful approximation when you have a homogeneous case. And the idea here is, well, and you can still kind of define your quasi-particle energies, but now it's both a function of a momentum and a position, right? And this is given by this, the same expression. The same expression, but with the local density used. Okay.
I have a question. What is the conditional applicability of this L?
This has to be smooth compared to the wavelength of the quasi-particle.
This length scale of the potential.
And this is basically the semi-classical limit. So this quasi-particle, of course, it has a dynamics, right? If you create a quasi-particle somewhere, this density gradient will drive it, you know, accelerate it. So the equations of motion that you get is this. The gradient in the quasi-particle energy accelerates the particle, the momentum, and the group velocity, of course, tells you how fast the particle moves in which direction it goes. Right. This is still a stationary VEC. Now, what if the VEC actually flows, right? Rotates or oscillating, right? And then what? How would you describe the quasi-particle dynamics in the semi-classical way? Well, so this is inhomogeneous BEC, and now with a flowing BEC or moving BEC, and the wave function has a phase. As well as a amplitude, okay, and the phase can change from place to place, so there's some inhomogeneity acquired in the phase, okay. Even if you have uniform BEC but so moves with a constant velocity, still the phase acquires inhomogeneity, okay, and the gradient of this phase gives the superfluid velocity, and if the flow is not uniform, and this in general depends on position as well. So the question is, and then what? How would you describe the dynamics of quasi-particles with the added complication that the BEC actually flows? Right? There's a local velocity there. Well, and there's this old idea of a Doppler shift.
Without vortices.
So this with or without vortices, and
you cannot have vortices.
No, the vortices.
Describe it as singularity.
Singularity, yeah. If the phase has winds 2 pi around some point, still you have a local gradient. Yeah. Then how would you modify this to still how the semi-classical picture should be modified in this case? Well, this is this old idea, right, based on this reference frame change, and if the medium moves, right, then the particles acquire a Doppler shift, okay, and uh, so So the proposed modification would be the quasi particle energies now requires an extra term that and we hope still that the quasi particle moves according to the same equation. Okay. So this we hope this still works. Okay. Okay, I will tell you that indeed that still works. Okay. And so this is okay. All right. I mean all this is down in the say to first order in the gradient of the phase and in the gradient of the density. Okay, so this is really a only in this limit actually this is well defined. So this equation is still correct, but and surprisingly, the P is no longer the physical momentum of the quasi particle. Okay, this P actually is not the physical momentum. Okay, that okay. Without knowing this, they have all kind of difficulties understanding this system. Yes.
Are you assuming that the
fluid is
divergent through, so the density is constant in time? Can you
lie there? Yeah, the density can still depend. Yeah, this all can still depend on time. Say the Vs itself may evolve in time.
Okay.
Yeah, it's. But the here the assumption is that it evolves slowly in time, so that the quasi particle you know can adjust it. So this is okay. If we actually go back to Landau's argument for actually you go back to his first. Landau leaves his first book, Mechanics. Okay, there equations like this. Now it's like E equal to E zero plus P dot V being derived. If you read carefully, you'll realize that this P is not really the mechanical momentum of the particle. It is a canonical momentum, but not the physical mechanical momentum. Yeah. So then the question is, what is the physical momentum of the quasi particles? Right? What is and in fact, this P is the momentum of the quasi particle in the co-moving frame. Because the argument is always well to get the energy dispersion in a moving medium, what you do is that first you go to the co-moving frame where the medium is stationary, right? And suppose you have a dispersion and E0P, and then translate back to the lab frame, okay? But when you make this transformation, you still use the old the momentum in the co-moving frame, and the question of what is the mechanical momentum in the lab frame is never actually spelled out. Okay, and that would be easy for ordinary particles, but for quasi particles in excitations in a medium, this is actually not a trivial question. And so the question now is what is the mechanical momentum
Okay, you define everything so just in the lab frame using the standard operators of a momentum. Yeah, whatever that momentum pops out, that is. Okay.
And this equation, which is written here for omega, is just in the lab frame.
This is in the lab frame, yeah. But using the spectrum in the co-moving frame and using the momentum of the co-moving frame. Okay. So the question is, so what is the mechanical momentum of quasi particles in the, you're asking how would you define that? But before going into that definition, I'd like to describe some physical effect that actually the physical momentum that really matters. Okay.
Physical momentum is simply
the mechanical
mass to volume. Velocity.
And so what is the mass of a quasi particle? Okay. Something related. Yeah. By asking that question, I think it's certainly closer to the truth.
What we should do probably is to calculate for quasi particle. We first calculate the energy of the liquid moving as a whole, and subtract the energy with, or subtract it from energy with excitation.
Right? Yeah.
And then what remains is just this energy.
Yeah, but that's answered the question of energy. But then what's the momentum? You have to do a calculation for the subtraction for the momentum. Yeah. As well, and the total momentum is you make a subtraction there. Okay. I have a simpler way to get to there. But first of all, I'd like who needs mechanical momentum, right? And usually we have a canonical momentum. We can diagonalize things. We always deal with a canonical momentum. Who needs the mechanical momentum?
Yeah. Canonical momentum will be conserved in the homogeneous medium.
Yeah. However, if you are concerned with forces and the torques, then the mechanical momentum is important. Okay, let me come to this question then. So, who needs mechanical momentum? I describe many years ago, I had a paper with David Thales and Ping Lau about transverse force on a vortex. Okay, so who needs mechanical? Well, and we certainly need. and there was so the transverse force on a moving vortex. Through very general arguments, okay, you can derive in the limits of a weak, the small velocity of the vortex, you can derive the following formula. That is the force equals to something times the velocity of the vortex, okay, and
that is something like circulation. Yeah.
Yeah. This is a momentum circulation. momentum circulation at places where far away from the vertex, but going around the vertex. Okay, so if you have a vertex here, and you go to places very far, and it calculates the momentum of circulation. And what's the momentum of circulation? Well, it is the momentum density locally, and just integrate around. Okay. And as you can see that in the sense that we deal with forces, right? And clearly, and you have to use, the canonical momentum is no longer, you know, the right thing to consider. You really need the mechanical momentum. So that's one case that we do need the mechanical momentum, right? And then another one is again in the presence for vertex. And we actually in our paper we described in quite detail and the following proposed experiment has not been done yet, but seems to be feasible. So we have suppose we have a vertex, right? Kind of flows, okay, and just a single vertex in a trapped BEC, okay. So the density profile of the BEC may look like this. I don't know. Okay, and we're going to go to a place measured the momentum distribution at a place some distance away from the vertex center. Okay. So we want to know is the momentum distribution. Density is like that, and what? So here, the BEC flows, right? There's average flow, right, in that region in the vertical direction, and then the quasi particles zooming around, right? And I want to answer this question, you know, for finite temperatures. Okay. Here at finite T. Okay, I'll tell you the result. First, then. Okay. So the momentum distribution. Okay. Let me use Q. QC to do that. So QC is the momentum, mechanical momentum.
Is the same as physical or what?
Yeah. The mechanical means the same as a physical. And I use Q like, with a subscript C for reasons to be.
Can you tell us anything about how the local momentum distribution is defined?
How?
Yeah.
Well, I propose an experiment in a moment.
Okay.
So first of all, let me just draw a. Okay, there is a delta function coming from the BEC, right? It's a macroscopic number of particles in the BEC state that has a momentum that's going in that direction. And then there's a broad distribution okay, and then if you calculate the canonical momentum distribution, it's something else. Okay. So this is a mechanical momentum, and this is canonical. They're different. Okay, the question is, which one you actually can measure, right?
Can you write exactly what you're computing, like some
form? Yeah. So this is, this is the distribution function. Let me say, so delta n, the fraction for number of particles. In that region, that has momentum QC, and but this one is actually delta N is a P. Okay, and so I have certainly have the scales and everything in the paper. Okay. But this moment, I do not like to just give the details. You only need to know there's a difference. Actually, there's a substantial difference. And then I propose an experiment. Yes?
Only at finite T or?
At finite T. Zero T, we certainly have not calculated the quantum fluctuations, but so at zero T, that means just the delta function. Okay, this is finite T.
And in zero T, they are the same or not?
In the zero T, you only have this delta function from the BEC. Yeah, maybe plus quantum fluctuation. That's broader than that. Yeah.
There's no difference between the two, or
the trouble is that we have not really calculated the quantum fluctuations, so we cannot tell the difference. Right? If we ignore quantum fluctuations, the zero temperature, they're identical. There's no quasi-particle distribution.
Once more, what is this statement of this imaginary experiment? Do you move a particle inside the super?
Now I would like to describe the proposed experiment, okay?
Yeah.
The proposed experiment.
To what situation this distribution relates?
Okay. Let me do this first. Then you. So the idea is.
I want to see what's the center of this
So this is zero, okay, and so this is the BEC average moment, momentum per particle. The BEC, the condensate momentum per particle. Okay.
What about the dashed line?
The details. Yeah. So actually, the peak is actually on the other side. I didn't take care of that. Actually.
The center is the same.
Yeah. The same. Not the same. They're all slightly ahead of this thing. But this one is deviates more. Okay. Okay. Yeah, So the peak density differs by factor of 3 for our numbers here. Okay, and then the average and the peak value. So this one's more close to the BEC peak, but that one actually somewhat ahead of the BEC.
So if I know one distribution, I can know the other just by doing a transformation.
What transformation?
If I know one distribution, then I can get to the other distribution.
So you have to find the relationship between this momentum and the momentum. Yeah. There exists some transformation. Yeah, indeed. So
the question is that the velocity is inhomogeneous, correct? Superfluid velocity is inhomogeneous.
No, this is a vortex. And the velocity, we choose a distance that's sufficiently far from the center. And the region that's sufficiently small, that's the velocity dispersion, the spread of the BEC at least in that region is small.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the vortex, the velocity definitely is.
So the proposed experiment is the following. Okay. And it's I'm not sure it's an experimentalist here. It's a series that we can, let our imagination fly. And anyway, we shine a laser spot, say, at this point, and we transfer the atoms to another internal state. Okay. So the atoms here get transformed into another kind of atoms, right? And then you apply a laser field, some optical, how would you say? And then you basically sweep away the rest of the thing, right? Or move the atoms in this region momentarily to another place.
Oh,
okay. Okay. There's one can actually apply forces which are internal state selective. I don't know exactly how to do it. And my friend Mark Raisin told me it's possible. Actually, people indeed do that. Well, this is actually a real experiment being done, but you can selectively imaging particles with different internal states, or you actually manipulate them. This has been done before.
Can you make that point to move around? It's possible, but difficult. Basically, they use two random processes, basically convert the atoms from one hyperspin state to another.
Yeah, the Romans is this. Robin. Okay. All right. So now we have this group of atoms moved here, and then let it just evolve, right? Take away the trap, whatever. Just freely evolve, right? Then just time of flight measurements will. From the eventual density distribution, will tell you the velocity distribution of this. Okay, so my argument is that the final velocity distribution, which actually is the velocity distribution there, I think if you can ignore the repulsion induced acceleration of the particles during the expansion, and then the final velocity distribution is a reflection of the initial momentum distribution. Okay.
Which
the velocity, which momentum, right? And I believe it is the mechanical moment. We can take a vote here.
What we can measure is velocity, in reality.
Yeah.
And velocity is directly connected with physical momentum.
Yeah. Yeah. So especially when the atoms are, they're they're dilute, right? But then the momentum of each atom is just their velocity times their mass.
When they are dilute, there is no probably difference between
Yeah. So the question then is, to you, right, and to me, myself, is how the eventual momentum distribution related to this, which one is actually correspond to. So we took a stance, our paper should be the mechanical momentum distribution. I think this point still need to be checked, okay? Right? And
in the experiment, the temperature will change, right? If you remove the trap.
I don't care about the temperature. So a temperature just serves as a parameter that specifies the initial momentum distribution. So I do not care about temperature anymore. I just care about the distribution, the detailed distribution.
Depends on the temperature.
Yeah. The initial temperature, of course. So this is something that experimentalists probably can check, right? So tell us which one they really measure.
What distance scale are you thinking about? Between the cloud and the vortex.
Okay, now the scales.
How far away it looks like that it would be just a uniform thing. If it's very close, then I would probably thought that I would have to worry about bound states near the vortex.
Yeah. So the length scale. Okay, there are 10,000 atoms in this. Okay. The critical temperature is 52.8 nanokelvin, and the temperature we consider is 21.1 nanokelvin.
He
start to ask scales, but this will, so R equal to 100 microns, 100. So I forgot the units.
So I'm wondering about if I'm very far away from the vortex, then I thought that I would just can think of a uniform flow. I mean, that was my only question. So how close do I have to be near the vortex to see the effect that you are seeing?
I think it really boils down to uniform flow. I mean, yeah. This is the question.
You don't need
a vortex to actually have this, but there's a catch, right? So there's a question of equilibrium. If you just have uniform flow of BEC, we may worry to which frame the quasi particles actually get this equilibrium distribution. Okay, so with a vertex, I hold that vertex in the middle, I can wait, right? So I assume that that's the reference frame, that the vertices the quasi particles will eventually seek its equilibrium, okay. And these are calculated for this vortex system, and this is a system with one vertex and with the standard Bose-Einstein distribution without a bias in the velocity. There's an advantage to consider a vertex. I mean, it's the question. Yeah, there's a unique reference frame where your quasi particles get equilibrated. Yeah.
But in experiments, they actually measure physical momentum of physical particles. You can take your whatever condenser, moving, not moving, and try to calculate distribution of physical momentum of physical particles, not the quasi particles. That's what
you have. Yeah.
But as you can probably do in your theory.
That's what indeed what we did here. Okay, so now I think you now have appreciated the difference, right? There's a difference in the, and maybe there's a real experimental consequences on this.
Right, that what you will call p physical is simply canonical p minus m vs.
What is m then?
M is what is m? M is a helium matter.
No, it's not. Here's the answer. Okay, the answer is, the physical momentum is actually equal to the canonical momentum plus or minus. Rho vs, okay, and the rho is
it's a mass.
It's some kind of mass, but it's described by it's basically u squared plus v squared. I think in the description, quasi particles, u squared minus v squared
you,
is.
You should have the dimensionality of mass here.
Yeah, there you multiply this by mass.
And that is mass of real particles.
So this is the mass of atoms. Okay.
Of atoms, yeah.
Now this thing basically tells you this: the u squared plus v squared is the average number of atoms in a quasi particle. So it is the physical mass that the quasi particle carries around with it.
That's probability.
Okay. And the Bogoliubov equation, you know, is the equation for u and v, and for the bosons, and it's u squared minus v squared get normalized, not u squared plus v squared. U squared plus v squared is the number of atoms contained in a quasi particle wave packet.
This number diverges when you approach human vehicles very, very large.
Good. I would write something different.
Sorry?
Yeah.
You would.
I would write something different.
Okay, yes, please. I haven't really mentioned bare face yet, right?
let us introduce a function g which depends on r and r prime, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And then we can write it in terms of another g which depends on r minus r prime and center of mass. Okay, the sum of that over 2. And then I would take the Fourier transform over that, and that will be the local momentum. So we would have G on P and R.
Yeah. Okay. The P is the Fourier transform,
Fourier dual
for that.
Yeah. Now, and this is.
So this P would you call that physical or canonical?
No, it's canonical.
It is canonical. Yeah, it's correct. Yeah.
Now, what I would do, I would consider what is that for the case of one excitation.
Uh-huh.
Then I would multiply it by P minus M V S in the point R.
But the
integrated
M
integrated over R.
Yeah. But this M is the atomic
mass. M is a mass of atom.
No. So you basically, want to say that this role is whether you should have this.
But maybe it is the same. I don't know.
No, it's not. I mean, it's here. So let me just fix my plus here. Okay, that's plus. Okay, it's a different, you know. So the difference by this.
Sure, because
difference by this.
The first term with p, if you integrate it over all r, gives you the momentum of excitation.
Yeah.
Canonical momentum. That is your first term.
Yeah.
Now the second term, if it is really local, so if g is something which has a peak, then probably is proportional to your u squared plus v squared.
Oh, that's what you mean.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's extra factor come from this distribution. Wigner. So this something like a Wigner distribution of. So if that a density matrix, that would be the Wigner distribution. That's a good idea. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had a different roots of thought. So basically, you know, the rest are straightforward, really. Once this conceptual questions get settled, then the rest are actually.
So if you consider the condensate at zero temperature, not moving.
Yeah.
So if I look into quasi-particle distribution, I have no quasi-particles. But we know that if I look into quasi-particle distribution, I have v squared, which depends on p, and I get some roots. Is that the difference? I mean, you're talking about or it's something else.
I'm not sure I understand your question. So it's zero temperature.
So zero temperature, of course, you have no quasi-particles by definition.
Yeah.
But if you look into physical particles, there is, because of this u, v, whatever, e dagger a, you will get distribution of physical particles with some momentum, which are given by v squared. Right?
Yeah.
So, of course, if you move now the system, this difference will translate also to a difference in momentum distribution.
Yeah, this is what we eventually realized. Okay, and actually makes sense, right? So you create a quasi particle wave packet and properly normalized. Okay, I'll tell you what does it mean by properly normalized. Okay, then you ask how much mass is in it. Okay, then the transformation of a momentum of the quasi-particles going from one frame to another frame will involve this mass. Okay, that's what we eventually found. Okay, but initially we didn't really have this clear understanding, and so what we did was just followed a program we set out for electron dynamics in Bloch bands, and
explain what determines the width of this distribution.
The temperature.
Just temperature.
Yeah, mainly this thermal broadening. Okay.
But again, at zero temperature in homogeneous liquid, the momentum is not uncertain.
So this is really we go to somewhere that looks like everybody moving in the same direction. At least the condensate moves in the same direction in a small region that looks uniform.
Yeah. You completely neglect the quantum.
Yeah, he's only talking about the thermally excited contribution.
Yeah.
So not there's an additional one. Maybe it's additive.
Yeah, maybe some quantum fluctuations. You know, I'm sure you guys can. It's better suited than me to do it. Okay.
As they say, it's nothing complicated. Just a bubbly above.
Yeah, maybe this is zero. Okay, that's what you mean. Okay. Okay. Yeah. You. That's right. Okay. So I understand you now. So let me just. How much time do I have? No time. Almost. Okay, I still have 3 minutes, right? So I just go. Okay, 10 minutes. So quickly, just tell you how we actually approach this problem theoretically, right? So we start out with this GP equation, and that. And you can add whatever other homogeneities you may want, so we say that first of all we get the ground state, okay, the BC wave function, okay, and so get that, and then write your psi into psi naught plus delta psi, and rewrite the equation for delta psi would be the Bogoliubov equations. Okay, the Bogoliubov equations, the equation for delta psi will involve delta psi star, so you really had need, two components to describe it. So this is in terms of a two component equation, some operator.
Psi zero is solution of this equation with omega or without.
Some stationary.
For excitation on the background of this wave.
Yeah. Anyway, this Q operator has H plus, H minus, and H two. And H plus minus P squared over 2 GN plus V of R minus mu minus plus omega dot R cross P. So this is this consider a problem in the rotating frame.
What index do you have in non-diagonal matrix
elements? Yeah, H2. Two is G N R. Okay. So anyway, so this is really a linear problem. It's not the standard Schrödinger type because this Q matrix is certainly Hermitian, but this sigma z make the problem not Hermitian. Okay, that's one complication that what we used to do, another thing of course is these operators are all inhomogeneous. Okay, and what we do is to make a local approximation. Say we're going to consider a wave packet somewhere, so we're going to expand this guy near that neighborhood. Okay, if we ignore, if we just use the local density, local potential, local whatever, then this problem can be solved.
Size zero is cylindrically symmetric.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't at this moment doesn't really matter. Oh, yeah. I mean, this is general. This is
wave function with fine.
Something inhomogeneous, okay, but very slowly, so that I can make local
where
approximation.
Where zero enters this H?
Yeah, into this the density.
Okay.
in the density, and so on. Yeah. Okay. So, and okay. So we first of all make approximation. The Q goes to QC, which is defined as a Q, which depends on R, but we're going to replace R by RC, which would be the center of mass of our wave packet. Okay, we just set that to be somewhere. Okay, and then we solve the spectrum for this guy. Okay. And then the spectrum will have the usual form, and so we'll have a energy that's just like this, right? Partial rest, and then plus we actually expand this to first order in the gradient. Okay, we take into account of this gradient correction as well. Eventually, okay, so this guy gives a spectrum, and it's basically the you have plane waves, okay? But
for example, if you have a Feynman wave function with a lot of vortices, in the center of each vortex, you have a singularity. So
this will not work. We avoid the singularities. We will go to places.
Now, well, on the other hand, if a sufficiently high angular velocity, these singularities are very close each to other.
Okay. Okay, you're trying to squeeze me through nowhere. Okay, I mean, we believe even near the singularities, this is okay. And anyway, this guy gives a set of plane wave. Say U, which depend on momentum, say K and RC, right? V, K, RC, okay? And the solutions of this operator will have this form, okay? Then I use these guys to superpose these guys to form a wave packet. Okay. Which has some distribution of U K R C V K R C and EIK dot R. And with the requirement that's a W the center of mass average position is RC. And by the way, these guys are normalized. That's U. So U. So the W is normalized this way, actually, with sigma z. And because this the Bogoliubov equation is not Hermitian. And everywhere it carries this sigma z operator, okay. And we will take average, you carry with it. So, and the k sigma z, that's the physical momentum of the quasi particle. So that's where, and. And this is the same thing we eventually found, and And then we can derive the equations of motion for this, and the birth is involved, right? And if you want to see how birth is inters, read our paper. But I would like to just say a few more words, and then I will stop. Okay. So this is how we get a handle on this momentum. And this W eventually transform back to, will be eventually connected to this change of the consonance wave function. Okay, because delta psi star is related to U and V, right? So this thing actually equals to this, the physical operator this is the wave function, the many body wave function. Well, it is this wave function that contains excitations, right? And the extra momentum carried by this excitation is, so you calculate it properly, is the same as we did it with this Bogle-Lippmann wave packet, properly normalized, okay, eventually found this connection here. This normalization, by the way, is the same as when people just do the Bogle-Lippmann transformation of the operators, right? Going from the particle operators to the quasi-particle operators, this transformation, you have to conserve the commutators, you have the wave functions has to be properly normalized. Okay, so that's a normalization that's used for having one wave packet, one quasi particle. Yeah.
I have a general question about this quasi particle. So you essentially have some collective excitations, like 1 ounce or something.
Yeah.
In this local density approximation, you kind of assume that they are local in space, but in fact there's some
time.
It's not local objects. So is it consistent with this local density approximation, this assumption, basically you're talking about some collective thing, it's not really local.
Not local, space. Local.
Is it?
Yeah. In the
limit when Q, okay, your momentum goes to zero, so the typical distance is like 1 over Q, I would say. So if Q goes to zero, this large distance,
indeed. When your wavelength is comparable to the system size, and I think this is a need revision. Yeah. So in that sense, yeah.
I don't understand another thing. If you simply put your Q, your matrix Q, a constant matrix, do not consider the correction.
Yeah.
Then the plane wave should be an answer. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's
well, but eventually we do have a homogeneous thing. So this just serve as a basis.
Yeah.
They are fine as a basis, but we still need a local object to consider. Otherwise. That's why we need the wave packet.
Okay, but to have a local object as a solution of problem, you should have something homogeneous.
Yeah.
Otherwise, plane wave is very good solution.
Yeah. So
for what need do you?
You mean for a homogeneous system?
Yeah.
Why you need all this trouble to?
And you consider it as locally homogeneous, I would say.
Locally homogeneous. Yeah, locally homogeneous.
Yeah,
yes.
Correct.
Yes.
So I could understand that if you also include this linear correction, for example.
Yes.
Then you really need this linear combination.
Yeah. Yeah.
For this
term, yes. We this is actually important because this is the first order in the gradient of things. Gradient density, gradient the phase. Yeah, that's important. Okay. That's why we need a local object.
But then this is in a way something like electric field, correct?
Collective?
Electric field.
Electric field.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can have the gradient of V would be something like electric field, yes.
Yeah. In electric field, I wouldn't expect that the momentum is conserved. Moreover, the free particle in electric field will be accelerated. So the solution should be like Airy functions, not plane waves.
No,
you consider it as simply as perturbation, then you get.
No, I'm not considering eigenstates. You know, the quasi particles do move around. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not eigenstates. So that's their momentum does change with time, driven by the gradients. Yeah. So there's two ways to consider, right? One way is to, you always diagonalize your system, okay? You find the proper eigenstates of the global system. It's fine, but another way is to find local solutions and let them evolve whatever they like to do. I do not have to always stick to eigenstates. I can consider local objects and consider their dynamics.
Certainly, but if you consider you still all your linear combination should have the same energy, otherwise it is something which is...
No, that doesn't need to be. It does not need to be. And
vortex is like magnetic field, not like connected field.
What he has written is looks like electric field because it is linear in ordering.
Yeah. There's also like a magnetic field. So they're giving a homogeneous system. We're really forced to do one of the two things. Mm-hmm. The one is to solve this problem globally. Okay, take whatever your geometry is given. We are just diagonalize the system and find eigenstates to do it. Another is, given the fact that the homogeneity is so weak, right? And maybe there's something that from a local point of view, you can gain insight and it gets simpler.
Yeah.
So this is for example, we can answer the question of, for example, this kind of experiment. So
but I don't see any reason why you need consider necessarily the linear combination. Plane wave is okay.
No, it's not. I mean, because we do need to consider the gradient corrections. The terms that's linear and the velocity are all contained here. They contain. So this is important to take into account.
If you consider them seriously.
Yes.
Then it is like electric field, and then this state.
This can be done self-consistently, okay? And given the wave packet size, you can record this as small.
Splits the generation, and you try to.
You do that. You construct a wave packet and treat this term as small. You just take into the expectation value of that term in the wave packet. So that's what we did.
You solved the problem of the generated state.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, so that's this long exercise eventually wound up to to eventually just resolve this question, what is the momentum, right? And if you write equations of motion in terms of those physical momentum, then the equations are no longer that simple. The equations are no longer Hamiltonian, like, actually, and there are all sorts of complications, okay? But the good thing is that the variables are physical. Okay. If you write in terms of canonic variables, the equations are simple, but they're not. To connect to physics, you have to go one more step. Okay. In this problem, fortunately, you know, there is a simple relationship between the physical and the canonical variables. But in other situations, the connections are actually not that clear. So thank you.